welcome to the 20 Minutes of Filler podcast, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. This podcast is all about tabletop gaming in small proportions. Now here are your hosts, Andy Lennox and game designer Jason Katarski.
Welcome to the 20 Minutes of Filler, episode 31 on October 31, Halloween. I am Jason Katarski.
I am Andy Lennox.
Oh, that's spooky, bro. Spooky. Well, hey, you know, we are here to do what we do. We're going to talk about great little games, and we're going to spin this theme a little bit towards things horrific. So first we want to talk about some horrific gaming pet peeves, and then we're going to get into some horrific Lee, wonderful filler games to play on Halloween. But how you been, man? How are things going?
So great. Yeah, so good. How are you doing? What are you doing for Halloween? I saw your awesome costume.
Yeah, I'm going to be a Care Bear with my family. I'm Wish Bear.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. We look pretty dope. My my wife is going to be Grumpy Bear. And the oldest daughter, who is 5, is... she's really cute. Share Bear. And then the little one who's 2 years old is Wonderheart, which is just perfect because she's the little one who doesn't have her powers yet and stuff, and she's super cute. So
she doesn't have the Care Bear stare down.
Yeah, right. But we went to Lisa's my wife's grandfather's assisted living place for a party, and everyone thought we were pretty much the coolest people there. So
it happens.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah. What are you gonna do for Halloween?
Having a bunch of people over and trick-or-treating with the kids and then partying all night. And maybe we'll bust out some games. Who knows?
Wow, that's cool, man. You have kids and you still have time to have lots of people over and party all night.
They all have kids, too.
Yeah. That's
the way
cool.
It works. You just make all the kids party together, and then all you have to do is parent when someone, like, blasts their head on something.
Perfect. That always helps when you have, like, a friend that's a nurse or something, too, that you can invite over.
I do have an RN friend. We'll have to bring him in on this.
Awesome. Yeah, we still do that, but it's definitely a challenge. We gotta be in the right headspace to get a bunch of people and their kids together in our house. But, hey, you know what's really cool? Today, what? October 31st, is the last day of my Dead Drop Kickstarter with Crash Games.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, dude. And, you know, last week we looked like we weren't going to fund. And Patrick,
that was scary.
Dude, it was scary. I was like,
frightening.
It was horrifying. This game's not going to fund. And then Patrick came back from Essen and said, you know what? Everybody gets the stretch goals as soon as we fund. And it took off like crazy. And there's still a few hours to wrap it up. And it's going to be a game. I'm excited.
I don't think retail, it's not going to be that good of a deal when it hits retail.
It'll have a couple decks and it'll be cool, but right now if you do the deluxe version, you get like 8 decks, including horrifying monsters.
Oh, those are really cool looking too.
Yeah. What else is kind of spooky in there? Oh, science fiction robots. Those are kind of spooky. Well,
No. Okay. They're amazing.
They're kind of adorable and amazing. Yeah, totally cool. Oh, there's Rob Lundy's are kind of spooky. Those the rogues, the thieves, the goblins, and it's totally the D&D deck. But anyway, yeah, so that's been happening, and that's been occupying some of my time, but it's really exciting. But so are you ready to get to the feature this week?
Yes.
So
gaming pet peeves.
Yeah, this was your idea, and I think it was a little bit harder for me to come up with these kinds of things because I like everything. But I did find some things.
No, we'll get you going.
Oh, yeah, but I am going to disagree with
the negativity train rolling.
Oh, yeah, that's always good radio, right?
Like... You're going to disagree with one of mine? Okay, I think I know which one it is.
So
I think I know which one.
Why don't you go ahead and give us your first horrifying gaming pet peeve?
All right. My new pet peeve, this is a new one, because I used to think this was cool, but now it's horrifyingly overdone. And that's cutesy start player rules in games.
Oh, no, that's the one. That's the one, man. That's the one where I'm button heads.
It's over.
It's over.
So,
yeah. Yeah, because something thematic, right? Something thematic and humorous that you can totally disregard if you want to is worse than roll a die to see who goes first.
It's so cringeworthy. It's not even that. You shouldn't even do that. It should just be like, choose a first player. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with choose a first player?
Well, okay, so what's one before it was over that made you chuckle, like a start player reference?
Not to stroke your ego, but I really like arm wrestle for first player in Harlan Hoffman.
That's why I have a problem with it, because it's so brilliant. Like, that was a moment of clarity for me. I was like, how are we going to start this game? Well, obviously, it's whoever has the longest hair or the longest beard, because it's truckers. And then if you both have long hair and a beard, then you got to settle it over the top style, Stallone, and arm wrestle it out.
Okay. Listen, all games that have not yet, you know, that have already submitted their rules to a printer are grandfathered in. But after today, it's over.
You're declaring a moratorium.
I'm declaring a moratorium on cutesy.
Like, all right, we get it. All the fun has been had that can be had. Play the game and enjoy yourself, okay?
No, it's fine. I just thought it was fun.
That's cool. Because in our game camp khaki, it's definitely going to be, we're putting one in there. It's going to be like, the most recent person to go camping in the woods and eat poisonous berries goes first.
the last person with poison ivy.
They should all be super impossible things now. Like, the last person who took a ride on a UFO into outer space goes first. You know, it's just and then nobody will ever play the games. And then we don't have to put out quality games anymore because they won't be able to get past the starting rule.
I like the idea of doing ones that will, like, sow distrust among the group. Like, the person who is the least honorable goes first.
The person who used your toothbrush when you weren't looking.
Well, I guess gross. This game's over, fellas.
Yeah, you're kicked out of my house forever now. Okay, so here's one of my pet peeves, right? And this is not a major thing, but this is super annoying to me. It's cards in a game that feel like cardboard. They're like gritty, and I'm not just talking about like flimsy cards because that's not cool either. But like I'm talking about cards that like feel like rough. They feel like they're just made of like the cheapest. It's gonna crumble in your hands. What's
like
that?
They don't have the glossy finish on them.
Yeah. I just got these Rage decks for prototypes, and it was like a cheaper version that was put out by, I think the company's called Ideal. And they're just, it feels like I'm holding paper. And it's just like, this feels icky in my hands.
This is like a print and play.
Yeah, right.
That you just sent me.
And I think you see that more in mass market games because they're trying to make as much money as possible, and the market that they're selling those games to like doesn't really care so much about quality, you know, because they want to keep price down, but then they're trying to maximize profit. And man, I just like after holding linen finished cards in my hands or like really nice, you know, like shuffling cards.
If you can't riffle shuffle it, then don't even put it in a box.
Yeah. None of that.
None of that.
What's another one of yours?
Well, I definitely had flimsy card on my list, but I also have game examples without pictures. Have you ever read through a rule book and like you get to like the text example and it's this dense paragraph filled with numbers and they're explaining everything that happens? And like I'm not a dummy. But those things lose me every time. Like, give me a picture, man.
Yeah, you need a picture. You know what's worse than that, I think, for me even, is like the people who are so cheap. It's like they blew their budget on their logo and their art, and all they put in is a white Xerox text-only rule book. Like, oh man, it totally bugs me. Like, seriously, guys, you went all out for the sweet-looking game, and then you couldn't find like the extra $200 to print it in color or put like a picture on it or something. Brutal.
Yeah,
you got it. Visuals are important for games, I think, because we are a visual culture these days. Like, I go thrifting, I look at the back of a box, like an old game. Sometimes the rules are just straight up printed on the back of the box, and that's it. And it's like the early 3M games are like that, where you're like, it's super fine print on a cardboard box, and it's just like, I'm never going to learn to play this game unless I go to the internet and find a chart, a flow chart or something.
Better yet, a video.
Yes, that's it.
That's the other thing that gets me is when you don't, when the somebody puts out a game and they don't have like a video of how to play it.
Yeah, seriously. It's so, like, I mean, everybody has smartphones now. Anybody can, doesn't have to
There's
be that
no
pretty.
Excuse. There's right. no excuse for that.
Again, you know, like find a few hundred dollars and get one of these awesome video reviewers to do a really great job of it too. But yeah, that's a pet peeve. Like, we help us to play your game. You know, we know that it's wonderful and it's perfectly designed and everything is where it's supposed to be. But
yeah, I feel like that's the one thing like that keeps people out of the hobby. It's like reading a rule book.
Oh yeah.
And if you can like overcome that in some way, like that's does so much for the hobby. It does so much for your game. I'm really excited to see how the XCOM board game works out. Because you can just fire up the app and it kind of walks you through how to play, like while you're setting up and all of that stuff.
And that's what video games do really well, right? Tabletop games don't, is they're like just hit play and we'll get you started rather than like plan a date in the near future when you can sit down for a half an hour and read this rule book and then invite your friends over next week.
Exactly. Speaking of that, the other pet peeve is when someone's like, hey, let's play this game I bought. It's going to be awesome. Everyone show up at my house. Show up at the person's house. They haven't read the rule book. They haven't looked online at a video. And they're reading the rule. They're just like reading the rule book to the entire group to teach everybody how to play. Ooh, spooky.
That is horrifying. You know, the only time that's okay for me is at conventions because – we're all getting so many new games. It's like we have to just read them right then. And well, especially because like Kopak really, might be there.
Yeah.
And he's really good at doing that.
Exactly. Or if it's like a filler and it's really short rules and, you know, you can just pick it up and go. The other thing, insufficient storage compartments in the box. Now, I'm not talking about like the box isn't big enough. I'm talking about it comes with a lot of components and it doesn't at least come with Ziploc bags to hold those things. I hate it when I punch all the chits and everything and then I just have a box full of like random cardboard when I get it to the game table the next time because I didn't have a chance to like go to Michael's and buy my own little box so that it's not a complete mess.
Yeah, totally. I bought a like 1,000 baggies from Hobby Lobby or something just for that purpose, because you know some publishers are really good about throwing in all the bags you need and some don't think about it. That's a bummer. But speaking of boxes, you know, my other one is boxes that are big enough when the first edition comes out, like the very first base game comes out, that are big enough to hold the next 20 expansions. Like, like they're having some major delusions of grandeur about how good their game is going to be and how much space they actually need. And sometimes I know that's just for more space on the shelf, you know, in retail so they can charge more money for it and it takes up more space and catches more eyes. But, you know, it just kind of feels like they're trying to rub it in, like they've got this huge hit and it's like they're just going to be able to milk it for like the next 3 to 5 years. And then, like the perfect example of this one is the new Machikoro. That's like kind of the new hotness. It's IDW and Pandasaurus, and it comes with like, I don't know, 80, 90 cards. And it's in like
like one die.
Oh my. Yeah. Yeah. Two dice. But it's like, so that's like one stack of cards, right? That's like one deck of cards. And like there's like four compartments for these, and the one that the current deck is in of these four compartments is only like half full. Like it's just a box of air. And I know there's two expansions already planned this year, and I'm gonna get them because it's good. But it's kind of like, oh man, you guys know this is gonna be good. You know, like you know it's gonna make you some money.
Just rubbing it in.
I know, it's crazy. You got any more pet peeves that are horrifying?
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about the games themselves, but one of my pet peeves is when someone is mad that they lost the first game they ever played because they missed like one rule. Like if I'd have known that, I would have done it differently, and then I would have won.
I can't believe you ruined that gaming experience. Why didn't you read all the rules before I got here? Yeah, that's tough. You know, personalities can be very interesting. What's that?
If you do that, listeners, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't. Just be like, it was a learning game. That's cool that we now know this rule. The other one is know-it-alls who complain about game balance after their first play.
Oh, yeah.
Oh man.
Like, why don't you play it again before you decide to throw that balance turn? Like, you play it
one
turn time,
it's totally not balanced. That card is broken.
You're going to be broken in a minute, dude. Here's one of my things. Like, this is kind of my personal struggle, is that, like, my personal pet peeve with myself. This is my self-hatred moment. It's like when I have to make that choice, like now that I'm kind of doing the design thing and I'm doing the publishing thing and I want to like play test new games that I'm either considering or working on myself, or I have to make the choice between that when I have people over or that new Kickstarter game that just came in the mail. Because I'm like, I got to be able to play these games with real people to know if they're any good. But then I got this new shiny thing that I paid all this money for. And then do I want to mess with my friends and make them play prototypes until they die? Or are we going to play the new shiny?
My gaming pet peeve is people who have serious gaming first world problems.
I know, right? You shut up, Andy Lennox. I can find another co-host easy.
Copac, you're up.
Well, that's horrifying. That's horrifying stuff right there.
That's all the horror I can muster today.
Well, until we get to the games portion. So we're going to talk about some fillers now, right? And I'm going to go first because I have a couple and you have one.
Yeah.
And as I already mentioned, like, you have mad, crazy all-nighters when it comes to Halloween parties. And I'm a little bit more low-key right now. We're going to take the kids trick-or-treating and then put them to bed. And then me and my wife, we're going to maybe sit down and play a game. And we started kind of saying, we're going to play a Halloween game every year. And that game originally was Zombies from Twilight Creation, until we realized that we hated that game. But, excuse me. It was fun for a minute, but then it was just like, there's so many better games than this. Let's not play this game anymore. And
there's not any games that come with more zombies that for that price point, though.
That's true. That's true. But now you can. But now you can just buy the bag of zombies instead of actually buying the game. So,
hey, you. That's the best part. So
absolutely. So what we've been playing on Halloween is we've been pulling out the old dead collectible card game, the Harry Potter trading card game, which is a dead game, so it's out of print, right? You can't really buy it in the stores anymore. But if you're lucky, you can find big lots of it for super cheap on eBay or on BoardGameGeek. And when you go to conventions, you can find sealed boosters and boxes for pretty reasonable prices. And
if enough people play the game and it's a dead game, is it an undead game?
Bum, bum, bum. You know, that's a really great thought. But I'm hoping that this dead game, I would love for this dead game to become a living card game again, like be re-implemented somehow. It's got the pedigree because when you look at the credits in this game, the designers are Scaff Elias, who I'm not sure who that is, but then it's Mike Elliott and Paul Peterson. And the creative direction was Mike Selinker. So, like, these are people who know games, who know collectible card games, who are hot designers today. Mike Elliott with Dice Masters and Quarriors, and Paul Peterson with Smash Up, among, you know, others. Like, it's a really fun, simple collectible card game. It's a little more maybe streamlined than, like, Magic or something, but it has some similar ideas. So, it's Harry Potter. You're a wizard in school, and you have your wizard card, and like your Neville Longbottom or your Harry Potter or Draco Malfoy or, you know, or whoever. And then you have a deck that has spells and creatures and lessons cards in it, essentially. And your lessons are kind of like your mana that you play, and they power you being able to bring a creature out or being able to cast a spell. And the damage mechanic is really neat because when you're dealing damage to a player, they discard a card from their deck, and you start out with exactly 60 cards, I think, in your deck, or 40 the 60 might have been tournament or something, but you have a certain number of cards, and you have to have that number, and then you just kill each other's decks, and whoever's deck runs out first loses. And it takes about 10-15 minutes to play a game, and it's super, super fun, and the artwork on it is really cute. It's different than the books, but it's kind of that cartoony look that, that the books featured, so it's not using movie, you know, art or anything like
this
that.
This was before, like, any of the movies came out, wasn't it? I remember...
Yeah, I think so.
Like, on the shelves before, I think, the movie was out.
Yeah, and they only got to, like, the third or fourth set of this before they killed it, which I feel like if it would have came out when at a different time, maybe it would have it would have done better, because it's really, really good. But so that's a really fun one that I like to play.
Right. Wait. On the count of three, we're gonna do this.
Uh-oh.
I'm gonna tell you what Harry Potter house you belong to, and then you tell me on the count of three.
Okay. All right.
One, two, three.
Gryffindor. Hufflepuff.
Down, are you kidding me? Hufflepuff is the worst.
That's what the one that you belong to, right? I was telling you. I was like your sorting hat just now.
Yeah.
You're a Hufflepuff, bro.
Oh, are you kidding me?
I'm glad to be in Gryffindor since, you know, we're kind of awesome.
I was hoping that we would just both say Gryffindor.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, we would be besties.
Hufflepuff?
We'd be like, yeah, maybe.
What are they? I guess they have Cedric Diggory.
I don't know. It just doesn't sound very cool. So that's
why you put me there.
Yeah.
You're the worst. You're a Slytherin. I changed my mind.
I'm a Slytherin that could have been a Gryffindor, though. Anyway, so what's your game? And
The best Halloween game ever is Betrayal on the House on the Hill. It's not quite a filler. It's an hour, but. But I don't know. You can play a game in an hour and sometimes under because of just how the game plays out. So this game is a pretty simple tile laying. So the idea is that everybody is a character going into a haunted house, and you lay tiles to explore the different floors. And there's three different piles of tiles. There's the first floor, the second floor, and the basement. One of the funny things about the second or the first edition of the game was on the second floor, there was an underground lake, which for the longest time we thought that was intentional, because we thought it was supposed to be like a weird, spooky alternate dimension kind of thing. But no, it was just a misprint.
It was like, whoops, I guess that should have been on level one.
But it didn't matter. But it's cool, like the game, you explore the house, and as you go into each different room, you can find items, and you can find omens. So an omen, it just pops up, and sometimes you can use it. Sometimes it's like a dog, and it'll follow you around and help you. And sometimes it's a little girl crying, and you have to help her. But the omen, whenever an omen pops up, you have to make the haunt roll. And if you roll, I think it's under the number, you roll the dice, and if you roll under the number of omens that have popped up, the haunt begins. So you're going through this haunted house and finding things and finding omens and finding artifacts and exploring the house. And then at some point the haunt begins. And what the haunt is there's two booklets. A lot of people probably know this. This game is really popular. But there's two booklets. There's one booklet that says, you look up according to what omen caused the haunt. You look up on this table and it says which haunt you have. And you look up that haunt and it says, okay, this person is the traitor. They take this book and they go off in the corner and read this page. And then the other players read this other page and they do it secretly. So what happens is you basically get like this mini game at the end of that game where, and there's 50 plus different scenarios in the book. Like everything from like the house came alive and flew away and you have to escape to like there's a vampire to a werewolf to like every horror movie trope possible in this book. And each one, the rules are different. So sometimes it's all the players are cooperating to like escape. Sometimes one player is the traitor. Sometimes like the players split into teams. Like there's all different kinds of scenarios that happen and they're all different. And, I was not going to mention it on this show, but I couldn't think of another great just Halloween game. And it's a little bit long, but like this game is so beer and pretzels and light and stupid and fun. Like every scenario, like winning is by far like the least important thing in the game. It's always just like, what cool scenario are you going to get and how's it going to play out and what kind of fun stories are you going to make playing this game? And that's why everybody needs to play The Trail in the House on the Hill on Halloween.
So like the characteristics that maybe that shares with like a filler would be it's not a huge learning curve to get into, and it's light and approachable kind of a thing. Would you say
exactly?
That?
Yeah. There's a lot of components. Yeah, I would say that, but there's a lot of components, but it's because like there's custom components for some of the scenarios. But the game is really easy to learn. You just move and attack and go into different rooms. And like the rules themselves are pretty light.
Okay.
And then you get a chance in the middle of the game to learn the more intricate haunt part. Like you stop and you read and then you keep playing, and it's, I don't know. Okay. It's definitely skirting that line, but I just can't think of a better game to play on.
Yeah. That's cool. I'll allow it, even though I know we're going to hear from people that it's definitely not a filler, but that's cool. I haven't played it. I'm willing to play it though, because when you told me it was about an hour, my interest increased by 100% from zero. So, so my last one that I want to share is a little teeny game. It's a lot. It's a tile kind of based game, sort of, kind of. It's a lot like Betrayal House on the Hill, I'm sure, but it's called Rumble in the Dungeon. And have you played this one, Andy?
I haven't. I've seen it played at game night.
Okay.
Somehow never end up in that group.
It's super cute. It's super simple. You lay out these like 12 different tiles that connect the different rooms of this dungeon, and there's a treasure box at one end or whatever. And then you just fill up the house with these random characters, and there's like 12 characters or whatever. Each player in the game has two hidden chits that tell them which character is theirs. And in the game, you either move a character to an adjacent room, anybody you want. You're kind of trying to keep your guy's secret. Or you can initiate a fight between two people that are in the same room. And when you initiate a fight between two people in the same room, you just choose which one to remove from the game and put out of the game. And once everybody is out of the house, if somebody gets out with the treasure, then that one gets 10 points. But the first person to leave the house gets 1 point. So, and you don't necessarily have to get out with the treasure, but it just gives you something to actually try to do in the game. Mm-hmm. And you have to try to do that without giving away who you are, so you have to kind of be sneaky about it. But, yeah, it's just a really simple game that takes, like, 15 minutes. You do, like, three rounds. And the artwork is awesome. There's a guy that looks like Link. There's, like, a big troll. There's a big, like, warrior knight. There's zombies. And the art is all by Quan Chai Mariah, who just great stuff. He did the kids deck for my game Dead Drop. But it's a really teeny tiny game. And there's another version called Rumble in the House, which is very similar in the rule set. And you can combine the two to make like two levels. You can have the house, and then the basement is the dungeon. But it's a super cute, approachable game. You can play with any kind of age group. And it's a perfect party game because the amount of time it takes and the simple rules. You know, like, hey, either move a guy or make two guys that are together fight and try to keep your guys a secret to get points. So that's a really cool little game by Olivier Safra, I believe is the designer's name, from Flatline Games. So Rumble in the Dungeon is a good, horrifyingly wonderful Halloween pick.
Fantastic.
Awesome. So, hey, that's all we got time for today. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys have a nice, safe Halloween and a happy, happy November 1st.
Don't eat so much candy.
That's true. And make sure to check for horrible things in there, like high fructose corn syrup and razor blades.
Send your candy to me.
Yes. Only peanut butter items, please. All right. Thanks for tuning
in. I'll take all your black licorice and candy corn because I'm apparently the only person in the universe who loves those.
Interesting. Interesting. All right, guys, we'll see you next time. We are 20 Minutes of Filler. You can find me on Twitter at Jason Kotarski.
I'm at Andy_Linux.
And you can find more great podcasts on DiceTowerNetwork.com. Play some great little games.